Hello and welcome to VentureCast. I am David Hornick from August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital.
We are from August Capital.
We had a proposal from a guy whose name is August. Did you see that?
Yeah, so we got an email. Do you want to meet with this guy? And his name is August. So we said yes. Period. That was that.
So if you want to get a meeting with August Capital.
And your name is August.
You're in.
Or you could change your name to August. August Wilson can meet with us anytime he wants.
Fine with me.
Yeah. So, Howard, it's 2010. Have you noticed that?
I'm still working on my New Year's resolution.
You mean like you're working on living up to it or coming up with one?
Coming up with one. Do you have one?
No, I mean, ideally I'd like to stay less fat. Is that that's sort of a namby-pamby kind of resolution, like stay less fat.
I was thinking about making it to sleep more, but I already sleep enough.
Yeah, well, so that's not useful.
But I like sleeping.
You do?
Overrated.
Sleeping's all right.
Yeah, all the normal resolutions are like, you know, lose weight or eat healthier food or spend more
run
time
more.
With your kids or run more, whatever it is. My New Year's resolution is to fund 10 companies this year.
Whoa.
Not going to happen, but it's my resolution.
And how about just one awesome one?
Yeah.
I had this conversation. I teach this business school class. And I don't even remember the context of the conversation, but basically I said, look, if you did one Google and every other thing you touched was a total piece of turd, you were a brilliant venture capitalist. Like, you're a genius. And one of my students was infuriated by this. He said, that's ridiculous. Of course not. If one out of 20 investments that you make is good and the other 19 are total garbage, then you're a terrible VC.
Dollars in and dollars out is all that matters.
I said, you know, Google's the most successful venture investment ever. If you were to put money in it and you never did anything else that worked, you're still a brilliant venture investor. So, well, no, maybe you still are a sucky investor even if you've made a bunch of money. What do you think of that?
So if you judge successful by, you would want to emulate that person? I would want to emulate that person, so I would judge by success.
Because you're just worried about the outcome.
I would rather have one Google and 19 zeros than 20 2Xs or 3Xs or 4Xs.
So much. Well, Google, we should do the math. Investment. I wonder if 24Xs would get you there, actually.
I don't think so. It was worth $196 billion today, or whatever.
Well, but not at the you know, they probably distributed it when it went public. What did it go public at?
Yeah, but the investor probably kept half of his shares or at least that in the public market for the write-up.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, you can do the math.
$100 billion.
I'll stick with that deal.
$100 billion if you owned, let's say you even got diluted down to, oh, they started out with what?
$100 million.
15% a piece or something?
No, 10, I think.
10%. So let's say you went down to 7.5 or something. That means they...
So 10 seven million and to half, 15 billion.
$7.5 billion at a $100 billion valuation.
But it's a 200
in return. Well, no, but that's not how it's calculated.
Yeah, okay.
So let's say it's... Okay, fine. I'll give you a little
price.
Bit. Let's say $10
billion. Yeah.
They made $10 billion in gain. So what would it take? 20 deals. That means to do $10 billion in gain over 20 deals means you'd have to make...
So if you had 20 deals at $10 million each at 200 and they were all 5X, that would only be a billion. You'd only be at 10% of the gain for doing the Google deal.
20 deals at a billion.
Billion in profit, right? 10 million bucks a piece times 20 is 200 million at 5X is $1 billion.
Yeah, so the person who did Google's a genius, period. Like, that just doesn't matter. So why don't we just resolve to do the next Microsoft or Google this coming year?
So what about, that's a good New Year's resolution, but I'm not done with the prior topic
yet. Oh, okay.
So what about,
that's fine. I mean,
you know, the guy who does the deal like that and then never does another deal versus the guy who just keeps beating, he does that deal and then he just keeps beating his head against the wall to the point where people just say, please stop. So it's one thing to do that and then do 19 deals. It's usually not the first deal that happens on, but, you know, sometimes there's very successful, not just investors, but very successful entrepreneurs who do very well on a company and then tank 2, 3, 4, 5 companies afterwards and don't recognize, much like this wizard investor potentially, that maybe luck is a piece of it.
Yeah.
Luck and timing.
Look at our partner Dave, whose very first investment was Seagate. So you say, wow, that's good. Good start. Of course, then he went and did Microsoft and Sun a relatively short period of time after that. So
timing. That's what you'll say.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. The outliers argument.
Yeah.
My first investment was PayCycle, which turned out to be a good deal. We sold it for a couple hundred million to Intuit. Not quite Seagate, though. But I feel like, you know, my plan is to sort of build. It's like a rolling thunder. That's just the I'm just getting started, and then there's, you know, like growing and growing and growing until, like, this year when I invest in Google or Microsoft 2.0, fulfilling my resolution.
So the best fun in this business is you meet a company and you look at it and it's young and there's not much there, and you can think of all these reasons why not to invest, but then you say to yourself, but it could be. And that's the hard call.
That is the hard call, but because the problem is, how many companies do you think you meet with in a year? 100?
Meet with?
Yeah.
More.
Yeah, probably more than that. But if we met with a couple a week, it'd be 100.
Between the two of us, 500 probably. Yeah.
All right. So let's say that. So we're going to meet with 500 companies over the course of this year, and, you know, some big proportion of those you could reasonably say, well, what if, you know, like, oh, what if this one's it? So we can't exactly put in, let's say it's just 10%. We can't put money into 50 companies.
Well, some guys do that.
That's true. Jeff Clavier was just here talking about his deals, or Ron Conway, or, you know.
But if one of them hits, he's a genius.
See, maybe that's the plan.
And if it doesn't
work.
That's
not what we do, though.
No.
That's not our model. Our model is 2 a year. Last year was crazy. How many deals did you end up doing last year? 3, and
three.
I did 4?
I did 1 in January, 1 in December, and 1 in between.
What did I do?
You did like 4.
I did 4, and they're same kind of spread out. So yeah, so because this is our podcast, we should talk about our deals because we are allowed to.
Sure. And when Jeff Clavier is here, we ring a little bell each time he promotes a company,
right.
But we won't do that for ourselves, and we'll just say right ahead of time we're about to blatantly promote our own deals.
Well, look, here's the thing. Actually, it's the new year, right? So people are going to say, what are you excited about? And I always have this problem, right? Because the things I'm excited about, I invest in. Right? Like, yeah. Why? I mean, obviously, there are some things. Like, am I excited about Facebook? Yes, I'm very excited about Facebook.
Because they might buy one of your companies.
Did I invest in Facebook last year? No, but they grew 200 million users. That's unbelievable. So that's awesome, and that's great, but it has nothing to do with my job. So what am I excited about? The stuff that I did last year, that's what I'm excited about.
Well, then what did you do? Okay, your last one. What was that?
Yeah, so no, I think the thing that's interesting is I think you and I both kind of closed a deal kind of November, December, right?
For me, it was December 19th.
Seriously?
I was skiing that
night. You do understand that the lawyers and everybody hate you.
No, they loved me because they finished it right before, on Friday before the holiday. They were like,
actually, that's pretty good.
They liked it.
That's pretty good. If it had been that following Monday, they'd hate you.
Yeah.
If
you want to get a deal done fast, tell them it's going to be December 19th, and they will get the deal done.
I was on the phone with a lawyer working on a deal, working on getting something sorted out up until 7 p.m. on New Year's Eve. I literally had to leave dinner to go sign it.
Was he charging you double?
At 7 p.m. I don't know. Mike Patrick over at Fenwick & West was the attorney. Mike, were you charging us double for New Year's Eve? I hope not. But I will say this. Those of you who are listening, Mike Patrick is a fantastic attorney. He was incredibly responsive over that entire week. So I have nothing but incredible appreciation for Mike, because while I was answering my phone and checking my email or whatever, he was doing the work, right? You were off skiing.
Yeah,
and you go, hey, did it close? Yeah, it closed.
No, I got off the lift, and I looked at my email, like, at the top of the mountain, and said, it's closed, and I closed it, and I skied down the mountain.
Yeah, like, that's good.
But all being fair, we had that day closed in the office because we were having some construction in the office. Otherwise, I would have been at work.
Oh, that must have been it. It must have been.
I actually fell and broke my rib that day. That was punishment for taking the Friday off.
Yeah. That is punishment.
But it's almost better.
Broke a rib.
Anybody cares.
I didn't break a rib skiing, but that's because I was skiing in like the bunny slopes with my kids. They were like, oh, let's not, I don't want to go down the diamond, scary. I did think it was interesting. It's probably telling, like, it's a little bit like the battered wife syndrome, that my whole family was completely unsurprised when, as I sat down for New Year's Eve dinner, I look at my phone and say, oh, excuse me, I have to go sign something. I'll be back in 20 minutes.
You had to hunt for a fax machine or something.
Yeah, I had to go home to sign it because I had to scan it.
You were in a restaurant when you got the call?
Yeah, God. So I had to leave. But I actually thought to myself, it is a very bad sign, although good for me, that my kids didn't even, they're like, oh, all right, we'll see you when you get back. Like, that's true sign that they were trained as children when I was a lawyer.
Why didn't you just write on a piece of paper that you accept the terms and sign it and take a digital picture with your iPhone and just email it?
Yeah, that would have been fine.
That would have been good enough.
But I wanted it to be official. I wanted it to be, you know.
So you're going to tell us about this deal you closed.
Oh, yeah. So my deal, and I'm not going to talk about it much because truthfully it's pretty early, but we did a seed deal, which I think is fun. A company called WePay, and it's a Y Combinator company. And it's founded by these two really great young entrepreneurs in their early 20s who basically had this realization that it's incredibly hard to figure out how to pay for bills that are shared, right? If you're in a house with a bunch of guys, or you're in a fraternity, or you are trying to collect the money for a soccer team or whatever, or like ski house, and you want it, and you have a bill for $2,800 or whatever, and you want it divided among six people. How do you do that and collect it efficiently and track it and manage it and measure it?
Yeah, that's the key, is track it and manage it and make sure that
you actually get paid, right?
Yeah.
And so these guys have figured out a very clever, simple solution where with an email, you can essentially open up a bank account and get started and send out emails to people and say, hey, pay up. And so I'm psyched about it. And it's a great group of people. This guy, Eric Dunn, who I worked with over on PayCycle, he was actually the angel lead, and PayCycle was the former CFO of Intuit. And Eric's working with me on this, and Mark Goins, and Max Levchin from PayPal. I mean, just like a bunch of people in the payment space. But it's super early, and that's the most fun as far as I'm concerned. Like, I like the early.
So if you're sitting at dinner with all your friends and you got to collect, like, who ate what and how much you got to pay, and somebody doesn't have the cash, and they say, well, I'll pay you back later. Instead, you should just
boom,
use this.
We pay. Send off.
And then they
emails.
Can't weasel later and say, didn't I pay you on that? And, wait, you owe me change, and that's bullshit.
Yeah, right. Or who, you know, like, who's paying electricity? No one ever paid the electricity. Yeah. No, so that's so we pay. They're good guys. So Bill and Rich. Good job, guys.
Rich, that's a good name for a finance
exactly.
company.
Exactly. Rich is the man.
Bill and Rich?
Bill. I had never thought about that.
High five. David can pick them, because if you're going to find a new finance company, it might as well be done by Bill and Rich.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, you know, sure, if your name is August, that's one thing. But if you're Bill and Rich and you're in a payments company, it's done.
It's funny how it took us that long to recognize that.
Well, so your deal was a company called Live Mocha, right? That's the one that closed.
December 19th.
What? I don't think they have names that are quite as conducive.
Yeah, I don't know what they do. You ask me what does a name have anything to do with it? And they have a great team. And when I wrote it Live Mocha with capital L and capital M, they came down on me hard like the brand police. There's no capital M. It's capital L Live Mocha with little M. And I'm like, what does it matter?
Yeah.
But anyway,
it all matters.
What the company does.
I would have put the capital M. We pay as capital W, capital P.
Until they change it, and then they come down on you.
They'll let me know.
Live Mocha is based up outside of Seattle in Bellevue, and they are the market leader in the world for online language education. And if you want to, their primary language that they're offering now is a free service to learn and practice English. And then if you want to get their premium service, once you're beyond a certain level and you want special content and more technology to help, like record your voice and put you in specific scenes or
get
have
corrected.
People get corrected, then there's a premium piece to it. And they're about 2 years old. They've got pushing 5 million registered users. couple million on a monthly basis. Interesting company, market leader. Did I say 200 countries?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, we got distracted because David's stupid phone started beeping.
It was an intercom, all announcement. Did you even know you could do that?
It's probably the guys in there doing the construction drop the phone or something like that. So Live Mocha is...
So are the most people who are learning English in China?
Right now, the largest market for them is Brazil, and China is coming up. And, you know, the number of people learning English is an incredible number. You know, there's more people studying English in China than there are people who speak English in the United States.
Oh, man.
Just fascinating. And they're also branching into other languages, and they're going to load course content for... German and French and Italian and Spanish and all those traditional ones. And their goal and vision in the future is that no matter what language you're in, you can learn another language. So if you're living in...
Portuguese to French,
and they'll have the content available. Whatever it is, that's their goal, that if you want to do language, you do it online and you do it Live Mocha, and cost is low and the quality is high, and they're already the global market leader, and you can't touch that.
Sweet.
Don't touch that. You said no singing.
No, I said I always sing.
Yeah, he said he always sing, and I said if you sing, I'll sing, and that'll be the end of the show.
All right, well, that was a threat.
I'm sailing away.
Howard's been studying guitar, so yeah, he looked up the guitar chords to I'm Sailing Away by...
Sticks.
But you don't have the voice, because that part is like...
Really?
I'm sailing out of... Yeah. Yeah, let's hear you sing that.
No,
you got that low...
I have a very low voice.
Yeah, but you can't sing, so, you know, forget it.
Anyway, so that was my Christmas deal.
Very nice. And oh, that's right. We had the Christmas deals. We got them done.
Yep. And the team was very happy because they all wanted to go away on holiday and know that their bank account was full and that they had, you know, years of opportunity to build their company without concern for cash. And they have a plan to be profitable on this money. And we'll push them to it.
That's good. No, I always like getting these deals done at the very end. In fact, PayCycle, I think the first round of PayCycle that I did back a bunch of years ago, we closed like right before the holidays, and everybody was psyched because, like, oh, you know, what a good way to end the year. Going to start on a high note and all that. So you know, I noticed that it's what, Friday the whatever it is, Friday the 8th. We're sitting here podcasting, and everybody else is in Las Vegas at CES. Have you been reading all the coverage, and have you felt left out?
I don't feel left out because I went there before, and there's just too many damn people there.
It's awful.
And there's too much sensory overload. Like, you walk through there, and it's just bright and loud and people, and I just don't deal well with that type of... I lived in Tokyo for a while. Like, going to CES is like going through Tokyo Station at rush hour. It is just... Except in Tokyo, at least you're taller than everybody, and you can see...
Yeah, maybe
everybody.
You are. I'm 5'4". I'm not taller than any population on this planet. Is there any population where the average height is lower than 5'4"?
Probably.
Other than the pygmy people?
Probably. The little people.
The Lilliputians. My son was looking at a story on Yahoo News.
He
was very excited. The Oompa Loompas, yes. That Yao Ming has married a woman who is 6'1". Or 6'2", and she's pregnant, apparently. And there's speculation about how big their child is going to be. Genetically speaking, that child should be a very tall child, girl or boy.
Nice.
Yeah. So you aren't feeling like, I should be at CES, because I do have some of those pangs, like that everybody's there. And what's good about CES is because everybody's there, there's some interesting, fun parties, and you get to catch up with lots of good people, whatever, but...
We also get this general sense, like... A few years ago, you went and there was flat panel TVs everywhere. And you could walk around and say, flat panel TVs are coming. And within 12 months, you could not find a tube TV in the world. They don't exist anymore.
And in fact, what was interesting...
And you know the reason behind that is because they can put more of them in Best Buy and formerly at Circuit City, that they can put them all up on the wall. So per dollar square foot in profit margins was better for them. When they had tube TVs, they took up floor space.
They took up too much space.
The push was actually like Best Buy saying, wait, if I have a high ceiling and I can line 8 TVs from here to there and I only sell one of them every month, I'm making good money.
But there was also a cost advantage per square inch or what. Because we invested in this company that was doing the chips behind kind of low-cost rear projection TV. And it was amazing how that market went away in a heartbeat, right? Like, this is a great example of you invest in great people building technology that works and is smart or whatever, and then all of a sudden some, shift just changes the landscape. And literally in the course of a single CES, it went from big screen rear projection TVs were interesting and at a price point that was rational to there is no such thing. You cannot get one. If you wanted one, I just need that one of those rear projection. No,
buy one,
it doesn't exist.
On eBay.
Yeah, you'd have to buy like an antique. How long's that been? 3 years or 4 years or something?
I probably have one of those in my house if you want it.
Yeah.
In fact,
I don't
it's so
want,
heavy,
I'm
if you want to just take it away.
If you can get it. Yeah, if you can pull it out.
It's
get
240
it out of there.
Pounds. And...
crazy. So I will say that with blogs and podcasts and everything else, I mean, just frankly, you just have to read Tech Meme. You know what's going on at CES, right? Right? What is happening at CES from what? Well, let's start with TVs. The only interesting thing that's happening in CES and TVs is 3D. This year, and we've seen 3D TVs, but this year there are actual sort of production TVs that are using the same kind of technology that makes Avatar in 3D possible. And so it's pretty good 3D. You have to wear the glasses.
I saw a company 5 or 6 years ago in Budapest called Holographica, which does 3D TVs, and you don't need glasses.
Yep.
And it is bizarre.
That's cool.
You could walk up and look at it, and the image comes out of the screen.
And was this one you could walk around? We saw one where that you could literally walk around, so they were projecting up from the bottom, like
I saw
a
that
city.
One separately.
It was like a city, and you walked around it. That was awesome.
Well, you're looking down into the thing.
Yes.
You can see like the planes flying, and you can imagine the 3D game.
Oh my god, so awesome!
I almost invested in that one.
We did too. I guess it was so awesome.
Almost, but not quite.
But we didn't either. No. Yeah. So 3D is sort of happening, but it's, as long as it's sort of glasses and all that stuff, it's not really, it's just, I don't think that's going to be a mainstream technology. On the other hand, I'm a little bit surprised at how important 3D is in the movie world now.
Did you see Avatar in 3D?
I did see it.
In 3D?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it
yet. It was great. It's a totally stupid story. In fact, I was just on, I invested in this company, Gravity. And Gravity is about to come out with sort of their out of beta of their product. Anyway, I'm on this beta, and one of their things was a kind of discussion around funny stuff on the web. And one of the things that was linked in Gravity was a Pocahontas write-up of the movie Pocahontas. Here's what happens. And then they just crossed out all the Pocahontas names and put in Avatar names, and it's exactly the same story. It's like,
don't ruin
goes
it for
in
me.
And, I don't want to ruin it for you, but you can imagine. But the technology
I'm
was
waiting
awesome.
For it on DVD.
It was really fun. No, you got to just go. Oh, you so have to go.
Crowds.
What are you? You're agoraphobic?
No.
What are you?
Is that the word?
I think it's when you don't want to leave the house. You're.
No, I'm not that bad.
You're crowdophobic.
I lived in Tokyo for a long time.
Yeah, seriously. You're just beaten. So TVs, but the real thing, as far as I can tell here, not being at CES, is that this year's CES, amazingly, is all about mobile. It doesn't seem to... It's all about mobile. It's all about smartphones and all that.
Well, crap. The timing of the Nexus One relating to that was perfect.
Yes.
I have one.
I know you do.
It's nice.
You're a believer.
My friends at Google Ventures sent one over for me to play with, and I got it a few days
before
it was launched, and... We passed it around the office a little bit, and now my daughter has it, and she's playing with it
today. It's total device envy.
She likes
device
the sock
envy.
It came in.
The sock.
It comes in a little neoprene cover, and she was like, that's a pretty nice cover.
It's cute. I will say the design is good. So is it HTC? Who are the
HTC,
guys? They did a nice job again, and the design is cool. It looks like a great... I mean, truthfully, it looks like a great phone. The challenge I have is that I remain committed to a keyboard... And these smartphones that are coming, these smartphones that coming out are not solving the keyboard problem. So I still have a keyboard smartphone in my right pocket.
Have you
and
seen
a,
an N97 one, Mini?
No, this is the Nokia one.
I'll bring it in for you. My wife has one.
You flip it up.
It's about the same size of a normal iPhone, maybe a little bit thicker, and you just push it up and the thing pops up and you got a keyboard underneath.
All right, let me play with that. It's pretty nice. That's, I need, because I need the like real estate of an iPhone or Nexus One, but I need the but I need a keyboard.
I think the most interesting piece of the Nexus One launch was their advertisement on the Google homepage.
Here's what I want to know. I'm going to launch a product next. How much do I have to pay Google to get my ad on the front page of Google?
$100 billion.
Do you think that there's any dollar amount that would get my ad on the front page of Google?
But it's in the billions.
It's got to be. So basically, they gave themselves $1 billion ad on their homepage.
I would love to know how many they sold off of that. God, that would be interesting.
So those of you listening who have that information, email us here at August Capital, Hornick@AugustCap.com, or are you Howard or are you H. Hartenbaum?
Howard@AugustCap.com. And we promise not to tell anybody.
We promise only to tell the people who listen to our podcast. And it's such a small number that
it might even
be
zero. In fact, if it's zero, they won't even hear this offer.
Let's hope it's at least one, and that one person knows how many they sold off of the homepage of Google.
Well, I want to say thanks again to Bill Maris at Google Ventures for having it sent over. It's very nice, and we enjoyed using it. And thanks.
No, it's awesome. No, it totally, like, you know, it's just it was really fun to get an early look at it and play.
Everybody
with it
was talking about it, and I had it in the box, and I took it out, and I walked into Dave Marquardt's office to show him the device, and he's sitting at his desk watching Walt Mossberg talk about the Nexus One. And I walk in and I go, "Here it is." And he's like, "Whoa." Yeah. That was pretty good time.
So, you know what would be even, it would qualify in that same kind of realm? Is if suddenly what appeared tomorrow was the Apple tablet.
Yeah.
But Apple doesn't have ventures. There's no Apple Ventures, you know.
Maybe there is.
Where's Bill Maris of Apple? We need.
Well, maybe Bill knows of. Yeah,
Bill,
so if you're from Apple and you want us to try out your nice Apple tablet, we would happily. In fact, we'll even send it back to you after we've tried it out.
No, I won't. I guess I will, because I'll buy it. I gotta say, look, I'm gonna buy a Nexus One. I'm gonna buy an Apple tablet the second it comes out.
Did you go to the Google homepage and click on the Nexus One ad and then buy one?
I did click on it and I looked at it. My problem is right now, this is unbelievable.
You already have two devices in your pocket.
I have three. I have three networks. I have an iPhone on AT&T in the left pocket. I have a Trio on the Sprint network in my right pocket. And I got, surely you've noticed all these people who come into our office with this Wi-Fi, eVideo, MiFi hotspot thing?
Yeah.
So I got that over the holidays because I needed to travel and have Wi-Fi, and I was going to be in places that weren't going to have it. So it's on Verizon. Now, what's the Nexus One on?
T-Mobile, isn't it?
Right, exactly. That's killed me.
The only problem I have with the Nexus One is I cannot figure out how to adjust the clock. It's like on the wrong time. It's not obvious how to fix it.
There must be a control panel.
Haven't found it yet.
T-Mobile. So yeah, I guess the good news about the Nexus One. Oh, here's the other thing about the Nexus One that everybody's talking about and I do think is interesting, which is this disaggregation of the phone and the network. That, hey, I'll buy the phone. It costs $500 for the device.
$529, $29, $49,
something like that. And then I'll go figure out what network. Or here are network offers, right? I'll buy it on T-Mobile
for
$230 or whatever.
That's the problem.
Well, it's a problem with networks in this country, right? That there are no quad band networks except for T-Mobile.
Well, then they should build a phone that makes it work.
I agree.
I mean, the average user doesn't care. All they want to do is buy it and have it work. And there's going to be a lot of people who buy the phone from Google for $539 and pull out their AT&T SIM card and plug it in there and can't figure out why it doesn't work perfectly. And they're calling customer service and bitching and moaning.
Well, this is an interesting challenge for a Google who, you know, they're a software company. They're not a consumer support company,
right? They should just buy all
four
networks.
You joke, but
I think Apple's going to buy AT&T soon.
I think that Apple will buy one, and I think Google will buy one. And then the big question is, does Microsoft need to buy one? Meanwhile, Microsoft
Maybe
is supposed to launch...
some startup that's building
a startup
a new network.
They'll
just give them like $80 billion.
Our special opportunities von Howard is $250 million.
And then we can sell it for $30 billion.
The most we
very
can,
quick turnaround.
The most we can invest in a single deal is, what?
380.
Can we do 15%? So, anyway, like $310 million. We couldn't build a network in my neighborhood. And now in the Palo Alto district neighborhood. Yeah, but I think the Nexus one's super interesting. And then, I was going to say, meanwhile, Microsoft has its new mobile platform that's supposed to come out, but they've punted until the like Mobile Congress in a month or something.
Now that Google's done the advertisement on their homepage, you can imagine every Windows machine in the world, when you boot it up while you're waiting, it will say, buy the new Microsoft phone.
So you've just hit on exactly why Microsoft won't do it and why eventually Google will not do it. Because, you know, can you imagine the EU and the US government if Microsoft did that? They would lose their minds. There would be such crazy antitrust screaming.
There may be some issues around Google.
Well,
we will see.
Hey, I'm no antitrust attorney. I've just played one on TV for a while.
And I'm not even an attorney, but we'll see.
So that one's pretty interesting. But I am looking forward, even though it's possible that the Apple tablet is like a big iPhone that is really not useful or whatever, I'm incredibly excited about it. I look forward to it, and I will buy it.
One of our partners here, Vivek Mehra, was in the Newton Project.
Right.
And this is sort of like the follow-on to that, and he'll like get this and say, see, I told you it would work.
I built this.
It was just early.
We built this city on... Oh, sorry. Just some more singing for you, Howard.
Thank you.
And then it will be integrated, the tablet will be integrated with the lovely Apple iTunes, and it will have the same damn DRM that everything else does coming out of iTunes and make me crazy.
So I've had enough with iTunes and their DRM. It's so easy to buy stuff, but then my kids, you know, they want a copy and they buy different music and they want to share
it
with me. It's my family.
Put it on your phone,
and I'm
your
paying
computer
for everything. Why the hell is there DRM and all that stuff? In my household, it just doesn't seem right. So, sorry, Apple. Amazon it is.
No, it's like my son Noah has just started his blog, Indie Rock Kid blog. IndieRockKid.typepad.com. And his recent post. Well, our partner Dave. Hey, Dave, come in, come join us. Oh, he's not going to do it.
Oh, he will. We're online.
Do you really want to be a guest on our podcast here, Dave?
I have to take off. I gotta go get up to the city.
All right. Well, good to see you. We almost got him. That was close, and that would have been miraculous.
Well, we did get him. We got him saying, I gotta go up to the city.
So anyway, Noah, my son Noah, has this Indie Rock Kid blog, and one of his recent posts was Why I Hate iTunes. And it was just a rant about the fact that he had three points. One was that he hates the DRM. It's crazy. And the reality is our house is admittedly an outlier house, but we have more than five Apple computers floating around the house, which means that we cannot have the music authorized on every Apple computer in the house.
We have four computers, two iPod touches, and an iPhone.
Doesn't work, right? So that was the first thing. Second thing is he complained about pricing. Fact is that Apple went up from $1 to $1.29, and maybe that some of that's around DRM, but that doesn't make any sense. And then the last objection was that they named some album that he didn't like Album of the Year or something. But anyway, but he said, which I agree with, if you buy it on Amazon, there's an Amazon downloader. It costs $1 a song or $5 for a CD or whatever, and it comes DRM free. It's an MP3 file, and it sends it directly to iTunes. So why would you buy it? I mean, look, I love Apple. I have plenty of friends at Apple and in the iTunes group, but why would you buy it from Apple?
I wouldn't.
Nor will I. I'm out. IndieRockKid.typepad.com.
Ding, 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 ding.
You can hear Noah's... You can read Noah's top 10 indie bands releases of 2009. So this is how manipulative my children are. And I suppose I should like realize that it's not surprising at all that they are, you know, that they're trained by me to be to come up with schemes. But basically, Noah then says to me, look, I have this new blog and it's great, but I want to write more stuff. If we go to more concerts, I'll have something to write about. Wouldn't it? So Daddy, you know, like, we should go. Vampire Weekend's coming, so can you get tickets to Vampire Weekend?
And what difference is that from when you just said, we'd like to write about the new Apple tablet, but if only I had one, then I would be able to talk about it.
We could talk about it in a more informed way. No, that's it. So actually, we're going to see Cake this weekend, so he'll probably write about the Cake concert. And then I just bought Vampire Weekend tickets. You never heard of Cake? It's great. Cake's great.
In the pitch this morning, I saw the album Cake, cover, right? For exactly. Cake. I just know I don't know their music. Wait, let me go to Amazon and listen to the trailer. Hey, a friend of mine, Paul Bragel, sent me an email about their new IO Ventures platform.
IO.
You looked at that?
Yeah, it's cool. Pretty. I mean, you know, it's good. It's I think you'd been talking with him a bit about it as he was thinking about building it.
Yeah.
What is it that made him think to do it, and what do you think makes it different than kind of the stuff that's out there?
Well, there's this natural tendency of entrepreneurs who have a lot of experience and success to look at, you know, new guys who are starting up companies and just say, God, if only you didn't repeat the same stupid mistakes that I made out of naivete and innocence along the way. So they're basically mentorship programs. And the one that they put together, if you go down and look at the list of all the folks behind it, it's a pretty impressive list of people. They're up in San Francisco. They've got, David will pull up a list.
Yeah, here, they say mentors. Our friends in San Francisco will stop by frequently. Aaron Patzer from Mint, Anthony Suhu from DotSpotter, Jameson Sue, Kevin Rose, Mike Marquez, Philip Kaplan, you know, Russ Simmons, Mike Arrington. Actually, I read Mike put, I forget whether it was a tweet or a post, but he basically said, you know, he's excited about what these guys are doing. They're building out this really funky space in the Mission. And Arrington said that he's going to spend a couple or a few days a month working out of their offices up in the city. So that's, you know, it's pretty interesting. Ted Reingold out of Dogster, and Jarrett Kopf, who is building AdRoll, who's a great guy. I mean, just a bunch of Akash Garg, who's at High Five. I mean, just a bunch of really smart people.
So if you look at some of the other programs that this is sort of similar to, like Y Combinator, for an example. The success of Y Combinator is due to Paul Graham's quality mentorship of the entrepreneurs that are there. And, you know, Paul has a lot of experience. He's done it before. He's seen a lot of different things. And he brings in people who, you know, are smart. They just don't have, there's no school for going out and learning how to do this stuff. So he mentors them. And I've always told entrepreneurs, you know, if you're new to this, first thing you should do is go find some guy who's been through the thick of it and get him to be an advisor or a mentor for you, so that, you know, when you're talking to VCs, you're trying to hire people, you're talking to lawyers or whatever it may be, you have somebody who's done it before. And these guys are institutionalizing a little bit more, and they have a great group of people, and I think it's fantastic for entrepreneurs who want to start something to, you know, get in touch with them and see if it might be a fit and see what they can learn there.
Yeah, so there are four founders over there. It's Paul, but it's also Jim Young, who was one of the two guys who created Hot or Not, and then
I love that site.
Well, Hot or Not is brilliant.
It's so simple
because it's so simple, and because it appeals to exactly the right need, which is you say, "Oh, she's hot," and then she says, "Oh, he's hot," and then they say, "Give us money, and you can find out who you are." Like you, and then you go, "Really? Like, how much money would you do that? How much money would you give for that?" $100, like, I don't care.
I was thinking 100,000.
Like, whatever, you know. So that was brilliant. So Jim Young, Ashwin Naveen, who was over at BitTorrent, was one of the co-founders of BitTorrent, and then Abra Whitcomb, who was one of the co-founders of MySpace. So you can imagine there are a bunch of good guys coming out of MySpace, early days of MySpace, who are going to come by and spend time over there. And obviously, you know, the stuff that these guys have touched is just really interesting. So
and they have some out-of-area guys, too, like Chris DeWolf from MySpace as well, even though he's probably still based in his beautiful house in Malibu.
Yeah, probably.
You know, you can go hang out with them there, right on the beach.
Yeah.
And he'll give you some good mentorship.
IO guys, can if you get accepted into your program, can you go hang out in DeWolf's house?
I heard you can stay there over the weekend.
Sweet.
I just made that up.
we're making Sorry, facts Chris. Up. We're making facts up here.
Sorry, Chris.
Anyway, so that's I agree. Like, I think that these programs are all about having great mentorship, and you know, like TechStars is about folks like Brad Feld being really good mentors, and Y Combinator, obviously Paul and Jessica, and now we have this one that is about having a big network of folks who are going to help out. So that's pretty cool. So we're psyched about that. And
what's their website?
They are ventures.io, www.ventures.io, so check it out. Here ends our commercial for ventures.io, the IO Venture Accelerator.
We know they're going to be a big success, and we're expecting some wonderful, fantastic company that's gone through there to come out and say, August Capital, my name is August, and I would like to pitch you.
It's as if we've jumped in early to our... to our sucking up portion of the program. I mean, is that necessary? I mean, almost. I mean, we do what? The only thing that we've got going on really coming up is we're going off to the Crunchies
tonight. But by the time you guys hear this, the Crunchies will be over.
So you'll know who won. Aardvark is nominated for a bunch of stuff, so I'm psyched about that. I hope that Aardvark wins because, of course, I invested and love them, and so that would be, you know, that would be good.
Does Max still have that mohawk?
You know, it was growing out and it was sort of getting a little scraggly looking, so I think he actually finally got around to cutting his hair.
So that he's in a mohawk again?
No, I don't think so, but you never know. I guess we'll
Takes
see
some
tonight.
Hubris to walk around in a mohawk.
Well,
you got to have some self-confidence about your company.
You do have to
and
have confidence.
You have to have
confidence. You have to have, you know. We saw these three guys on the slopes. They were hanging out all in their mohawks, and my kids were horrified, and you know, like, oh, those guys. I was like, that's right. Don't
Could
get
you imagine
a mohawk.
That if you never had a mohawk before, which would describe both of us,
yep.
Or at least me, and you decide you're going to go skiing and get a mohawk, and the first time you fall in the powder, and your head, which has never touched anything cold in its life, is suddenly sitting in the snow. Brain
wow.
freeze. It's like ice.
That'd be like hardcore brain freeze.
All right, we're going to have the August Capital Mohawk ski trip.
Well, we are going to have the ski trip. We're going to get together.
If there's snow.
I like skiing. The thing about skiing that's great, and that's a little bit like golfing. I mean, you and I are terrible golfers, and we golf, what, once a year or something. But the thing about it is that there's downtime. The key to an activity that's useful as a business activity is that there has to be a downtime where you're with different people. And you could. So in skiing, you're sitting on a lift and you spend a bunch of time, you mix it up, you sit with different people, and you actually get a lot of downtime hanging out, just like golf.
Yeah, it's not like you're on the lift and it's like with a stranger and it's like, so how's the weather? Where are you from? That was an awesome run. But when you're with your partners, it's like, hey, what deal are you going to do?
Yeah, or, hey, I got a question. What would you do if blah, blah, blah happened? Or, you
That's
know,
so useful.
It's good. It's fun. But yeah, so we're off to the Crunchies. So Crunchies are really cool. I mean, it's interesting that you remember when TechCrunch was like just the beginning. It was just this new little blog and nobody cared about it. And if you said the Crunchies, people go, what kind of stupid ass name is that?
A good brand. Brand is really
powerful
good.
Brand. Powerful brand.
I see a big company.
I mean, the Crunchies aren't just TechCrunch, right? I mean, the Crunchies are actually GigaOm, VentureBeat, and TechCrunch, right?
Except it just happens to be named.
But it's
after
called the Crunchies.
TechCrunch.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, all three of those are great blogs with you know that I read all the time. So that's great. But anyway, it'll be interesting. The one thing I will say, I'm hoping for, and we'll see if we see how it goes, is that the Richter scales will be singing. The nerd a cappella group that includes folks like James Currier, the founder of Tickle, and a bunch of excellent former a cappella singing nerds.
So you could fit right in there.
Totally. Count me in. Boop, boom, boom, boop, boop, boop. Don't worry, be happy. Boop, boop, boop. This is my audition tape. I think I've just been kicked out of the group. I was feeling so good up until that moment.
What else we got?
Oh, I think we just get on with our sucking up and call it a show.
All right. So, one thing I think is really fantastic for people in the software business is every now and then, go and see a factory where they manufacture something. Like, go and get a tour.
See real stuff built.
Go and get a tour of a car factory or of a where there's robots in work.
So you used to work in a car factory, right?
Yeah.
You were forced to... How long did you have to spend on the Honda factory floor?
6 weeks.
Seriously, six weeks.
And 6 weeks, 5:30 a.m. shift.
And you actually did real... You were, like, assigned a real task.
For 4 weeks, I was on the line doing the cabin harness installation, which is the
wiring for the car. That's hard.
Hard
it's
job.
Like, you know,
and you all, in a Japanese factory, you wear these white cotton gloves so that you protect your hands and you protect the paint and everything you're touching. And they like to tease the young engineers there so they don't tell them the important things. So the cabin harness is very heavy and it's hard to wire, and you're putting it through like cut out holes in the body frame.
Sharp.
Yeah, and so at the end of the first day, maybe half of the flesh on the sides of your fingernails are bleeding and it's coming through the gloves. And then the manager says, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, you need to wrap Band-Aids around all your fingers before you put the gloves on." Snicker, snicker.
Band-Aids, how about duct tape?
Well, that would work too.
Yeah.
Duct tape is harder to take off.
Oh, yeah.
So that was an interesting job. But I was commenting that, you know, if you've never been to like a factory before where they build stuff and you see people in an assembly environment and you see how... they never stop because the line is moving. You know, if you want to go to the bathroom, you wait until the 10-minute break that comes in 2 hours. It doesn't matter if you've got to go number one or number two. You wait because the line is moving by at something like $10,000 a minute in lost costs if you leave the line. So you hold it.
Yeah, I went to I got to visit the GM factory in China when I was on a trip with the business school students, and it was awesome. And I just heard that... more U.S. cars are being sold into China than any other market at the moment.
Pretty soon it will be more than the U.S.
Yeah, amazing.
So the factory piece comes up because you had brought up Alfred Lin.
Yes.
And he's got some serious distribution centers, which are sort of like a factory. It's a big assembly process line with pickers, and that would be a really cool factory to see.
Yeah, we've been talking with Alfred. So next time Alfred's in, I think their distribution center, primary distribution center, is in like in Kentucky. So next time Alfred's out in Kentucky, we're going to go meet him out there and go check it out, see how it works, because I think it'll be awesome. But yeah, so we decided that the person we wanted to suck up to this show, this is the suck up to you portion of the program, is Alfred. Because so those of you who don't know, Alfred's the CFO over at Zappos. He and Tony Hsieh built that company for a decade. And before that, Alfred and Tony in the early days had built this this company called Link Exchange. And then Alfred did other stuff, including...
Is that the one that Rakuten bought?
Did they ultimately buy it? Microsoft bought it from them at first. And I don't know if it ended up... No, I know which one you're talking about. No.
Link Share. Yeah.
But anyway... the thing that I like about spending time with Alfred is like he actually loves business and the idea of building a better business and being more thoughtful, and that people are part of company building and that you should be careful and thoughtful about how to incorporate them, and you know, it's not just numbers, despite the fact that he's a CFO or whatever. And he's just a very smart business person and an incredibly nice guy, and obviously has been wildly successful. He and Tony, sold Zappos for
Zappos
a lot of money.
Zappos is so fantastic. I was getting ready to go skiing a few weeks ago, and I'm leaving on Tuesday. It's Sunday night at 6 p.m., and I realize I need some snow boots. So I go to vip.zappos.com. I pick two snow boots of two different sizes, but the same boot. Monday afternoon, 24 hours later, they show up on my doorstep. I open them up. I try them on. One fits, one doesn't. Back goes the other one.
Bought the boots.
I didn't have to leave my house. I didn't have to go to REI and get in some huge line where they wouldn't have my size anyway. It was just unbelievable.
I would hate to say how many pairs of shoes the Hornick family. I have four children. Yeah. Do you have any idea how many pairs of shoes come out of Zappos?
My daughter came home a couple weeks ago and said, "Dad, I went to Nordstrom and these are the three shoes I like." And she had them written down, and we just went on to Zappos. She had already gone to the store and tried them on. I said, "Honey, you got to at least buy one pair from Nordstrom's." She said, "But then I'd have to carry them home."
Well,
so I'm going to go to Nordstrom's and buy something else to be nice, but Zappos ended up getting the order.
Well, is that shirt from Nordstrom?
Is that shirt from Nordstrom?
Yeah, mine is.
It's the closest department store to our office, so.
All right, so that's it. We're sucking up to Alfred. Happy
Zappos
New Year.
Had shirts I'd buy from them.
And I think they will. Do you yet? I don't know. Anyway, we'll ask Alfred. They got all sorts of other stuff. You can buy all sorts of stuff from Zappos, now it's Zappos is Amazon.
I interrupted your Happy New Year.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Sorry.
Forget it. Happy New Year to you. I was talking to you, too. Howard, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And thank you once again for listening to VentureCast. I am David Hornick.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum.
And we'll see you in a couple weeks.